There we go. Ta-da. A little bit of patience. Okay. I am, excuse me. I'm on page 68. Yeah, John.
The last words in your meditation, settle into your own sacred space. And we welcome him. Like when they say that prayer in church, I am the man. So your words to remind.
So where did it finally wind up?
I think it went down.
Yeah,
Whoops. Where about people?
okay. Energetically, we might be talking about the fifth chakra around your throat. Did it cause a disruption or did it finally settle?
Think it's subtle.
Okay. Now, I presume it would be right around here. It's our place of higher expression or higher awareness. So I'll try to be more gentle next time. Okay. This first part of this paragraph, which I just noticed as I was getting the lesson together this morning, is almost like a little meditation by itself. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes for a minute. What stands before you today is recognition of what you once thought you were, the memories accrued through those experiences, and the identity that you may now hold, unembellished by the treasonous self, which simply means the aspect of self that would deny your inherent divinity. As you're sitting there with your eyes closed, I'd like you to imagine that you were standing and looking in a mirror. And it's one of those infinity mirrors that just goes on and on and on and on and on. And what you first see, of course, is your physical body, your vehicle here. And then you begin to realize that who you think you are, that message has been created time and time again by many, many other people, and by your holding on to your old history. So, with each one of those realizations of who somebody told me I was or what I thought I was, one of those images disappears. Until you are finally looking in a mirror, seeing a reflection of yourself today. And that goes beyond your physical body.
Yeah, great. But we told the and Neil Thomas just called him back from commenting on Greenland, and I think he said the way he can take currency in Greenland is still there, even though the access for US to Greenland is almost complete.
Hello, hello, hello.
And also,
So, hello. Somebody's on a channel here you're not supposed to be on, where you need to mute yourself.
I would say those work. Not
all. They are cheering.
They mostly
Jerry, can you mute them yourself? Oh, they just did. Sorry.
Okay. Let's go back to that image of looking in the mirror. Without your history, without your past, without all the messages you might have gotten or given to yourself. And imagine that image you are seeing in the mirror begins to glow. And with each breath you take, that light becomes a little bit brighter. Until it fills your form, your physical body. And you become this being of light. And this being of light greets your physical presence here on planet Earth. And says to you, you are so much more than you would ever imagine. You are certainly a unique expression of divine consciousness. You are not your disguise. You are not your history. You're not anything or anyone anybody else has told you you are. You are the truth of your being. You are the light of the world. You have come to bless yourself and all beings. And breathe that into your being. Stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. You see, we didn't have to get caught up in distractions. We didn't have to get caught up in judgment. It was a way of getting through. What stands before you today is recognition of what you once thought you were, the memories accrued through those experiences, and the identity that you may now hold, unembellished by the treasonous self, which simply means the aspect of self that would deny your inherent divinity. The realization of the accord you may now hold will come in stages. You probably couldn't take it if it happened all at once. It's like having a light bulb in a lamp that has a number of different settings you can turn on. You get one, a little bit brighter, a little bit brighter, a little bit brighter. What it's suggesting is that it would be difficult for many of us to accept the truth or be embraced by the truth of who we are right away. You might have to take it a little bit at a time, or a little bit, a lifetime, and a lifetime, and a lifetime. You can only take in what you have the ability to hold. St. Teresa of Avila gave this example of she said, I want you to imagine a thimble full of water, and then a glass full of water, and then a gallon jug filled with water, and then a lake filled with water. Each one is filled to capacity for as much as it can hold in this particular time, in this particular instance. And even then, you're not jealous of saying, well, look at that gallon jug over there. I am rejoicing in the fact that I am as full of grace as I possibly can be in this particular moment. No judgment, no comparison. I don't need to. Along with that, in a rather paradoxical kind of way, comes the sense or the desire to expand my capacity for unconditional love. So it's being full and being open to expansion at the same time. To put it in a human scale, one of my teachers, my grandson, Finn, I was thinking about him one day, this is a number of years ago, and I recognized how dear he is to me and how much I love him. And then my little ego came walking into the picture and said, well, what if he does this or what if he does that? What about tomorrow? And my ego said, you either love him now the way he is, or you love him the way he's going to be. You can't have both. And my spirit sort of walked in and said, that's not true. You can't have both. I can love him exactly where he is right now, and I can love his becoming. Thank you. I can love him exactly as he is now, and I can love his becoming. So as contradictory as that might sound to my intellect, my soul doesn't have a problem with those two realities at all. Can do both at the same time.
Jared?
Yeah, Jim.
You mentioned this last in our Friday session, and it's just been resonating with me ever since then. That everyone is right where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I am right where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going back to the analogy in terms of thimble, you know, glass, and then, you know, gallon jug. Okay. So many years ago, perhaps maybe first exposed this teaching, it's like a little thimble. You know, was it something was there, like, you know, there was a seed, but I didn't truly understand it. I wasn't really ready for it. And as life does life and progressing, you know, it's like, okay, it's almost like spirit is saying, okay, I'm getting some. You ready for some more? Okay, you ready for some more? Okay. And so I don't know, maybe it was my unwillingness back, or maybe it was just that I just wasn't ready, wasn't time.
And not being ready at the time is perfect. You know, Jesus had that parable about the, called the parable of the talents. Talent was a coin back in those days. So it wasn't a physical or material talent. And what the owner did was he gave to one of his followers, one of his tenants, said, oh, I will give you 5 talents. And I want you, I'm going to be leaving town for a while. And I want you to invest that. And I want to make sure that I come back and you have more. And another servant he gave 3 talents to and said the same thing. Another one he said, I will give you one. He came back, called the guys back together again. Said, where's the guy with the 5 talents? The guy with the 5 talents says, Lord, Master, I invested your 5 talents and I got you 5 more. And the servant said, good and faithful servant, thank you. Because you have done things in small ways, I'll give you a present, a gift of 5 cities. And then the same thing happened with the third guy, the guy with the 3. I'll give you rule over 3 cities. And first, the third guy came up, said, oh Lord, I know you are a cruel and judgmental master. And I was fearful that I might lose your talent. So what I did was I wrapped it up in a napkin and I buried it. And basically the owner says, you idiot. What good is it if you bury it in the ground? He didn't have enough. He couldn't have dealt with 3, couldn't have dealt with 5, couldn't even deal with 1. Now, what does that tell us? See, here's where it becomes a little bit fuzzy. Because how much unconditional love you're holding is a matter of perception rather than truth. Pardon me?
You say that again.
The amount of unconditional love that I am holding on to is a matter of perception rather than truth. Because I don't know. My mind does not know how I am being measured. My mind cannot comprehend fullness and yearning for fullness at the same time. My soul doesn't have a problem with both of those realities. My soul is open to being. I am at my capacity. I love you as much as I possibly can in this moment. And in the next moment comes along, I will love you more. And I will love you more. But I can't do anything more than what I can do in this particular moment in time. So for each one of us, how much are you loved in this moment? And my mind kicks in and tries to figure out, how can I tell? Whereas my soul says, rest in the reality of what you already know. You know that you are loved. How did St. Augustine put it? God loves us as if there was only one of us. I love that quote. God loves us as if there was only one of us. You are loved as much as you are loved as much as you possibly can hold in this moment. And in the next moment, you can stretch to hold it even a little bit more. And a little bit more.
It isn't something that, well, for me, it's not something that I can be satisfied with, because God's divine unconditional love is so delicious. I want more. I keep wanting more and more and more. So being in the moment and being satisfied with where I am is not necessarily how I perceive it, because I want more and more. And that's been the beauty about this church. It's always been, it wants to give us more and more.
And it's really interesting, because the only way I can stretch my capacity for unconditional love to be filled is to be able to recognize that I am filled in this moment.
Okay.
Wow.
And how did Peace Pilgrim put it? One of Margot's heroines. When you have lived up to the light that you have, more will be given to you. Hadn't thought about that one. Thanks, Margo. Hadn't thought about that one before. When you live up to the light you have, more will be given to you.
It's the more. We say the more is more love.
Yeah, more light, more love.
So I guess for me, I see it as what you initially said was, I have all of it right now. And yeah, I may be given more to do out there, or more, I may be more open to giving away, but I feel like I have it all right now.
But see, it's not, you do have it all right now. And a moment from now, your capacity will have increased.
I've increased?
Increased.
Or decreased?
I don't think, my impression is you can't decrease.
Really?
Really. You can't go backwards.
Okay. Brings up for me again, the whole message of not enoughness.
Well, see, the difficulty we run into here, or the difficulty I run into here, is we start looking from our lower consciousness as compared to our higher consciousness. Lower consciousness is always going to say, "This you don't have enough. You need more." Higher consciousness says, "You are perfect just where you are." And because you are perfect just where you are, like the tenant in the parable, I will give you more.
That's just
what Peace Pilgrim is talking about. You can't handle more until you handle what you've already got. So it's a little bit paradoxical, but it's because we're working with our thinking mind as compared or opposed to our excuse me, our divine consciousness. John.
I read it somewhere and said, I cannot love you any more than you are with us. But maybe my capacity receives.
That's what I think that's what Augustine was saying, that God can't love you any more than he does in this moment. However, the next moment, the capacity for unconditional love can be increased. It's not, this is never static. In this moment, you cannot be loved any more than you are loved. But the next moment, you are open to deeper possibilities. Again, again, again. It doesn't stop. That make sense?
But we're still in human form.
Pardon me?
We're still in a human. We're still human beings. We're still having the
We still have a, we are human beings and we still have a, I still have a limited capacity, or I think I have a limited capacity. That's where my perception comes in. I think I have a limited capacity for unconditional love. And my mind, my heart says, no, you have an infinite capacity.
And we can choose where we choose to operate from.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How did Joe Namath put it years ago? He said, I can't wait until tomorrow because I just get better looking every day. God, I hadn't thought about that one in years.
Wrong way to go.
That's cool. See, learning can be fun.
Yeah.
Especially with you.
We are cautious in this teaching that the amplitude that an individual may attain be welcomed by them in adherence to truth. And what that means is you cannot carry more than you can hold. You cannot lift higher than you can manage. Now the capacity can continue to increase. Some of you say the kingdom is here. I want the kingdom. And the kingdom is here. And the realization of the kingdom is what comes through the progression that we are taking you through. The progression. We're, as they said right in the paragraph before that, we are taking you in stages. We're not dumping this all on you at once. Now, taking you through is an interesting idea. It's not an obstacle course. In fact, the only hindrances are your own creations and the creations that the collective has maintained that you give credence to. When you stop aligning to an idea that was claimed in separation, that's important. When you stop aligning to an idea that was claimed in separation, when you are no longer supporting it with a sense of identity that demands that it be there, you lift beyond it. It loses significance. The meaning is altered. You've probably noticed this in your life. Just on a physical plane, that if you go through your clothes closet, you find this stuff in there that you haven't worn in 2 or 3 years, maybe longer. Time to go to Goodwill. This stuff that's there no longer serves me. It's not bad, it's no longer, doesn't fit anymore. Or the color doesn't right, style isn't right. It's not me anymore. They're talking about the same thing, but in a non-physical kind of way. When you take a look at behaviors that you've created for yourself, defense mechanisms you've created for yourself, and ask yourself, do I still need that? I still need that one. And I'm sure if you're like me, there's probably a closet full of defense mechanisms that have outgrown their usefulness. We just don't need anymore. Time to clean house. It's not blame, it's not shame, it's not guilt, it's just a realization this no longer serves me.
You know, that's, I don't say that's not really for the faint of heart. I mean, because that requires that I'm on this continuum of a willingness to take mental inventory of that which you had shared. In terms of A, belief systems, two, coping mechanisms, but I have to willing to be aware that I have these coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
It may have become so baked into my everyday that I don't I'm even aware that I have
them. Mm-hmm.
And That's the deal. I mean, I really want to unpeel this.
That's what prejudice is all about. Okay, defense mechanisms that have remained that have been so much part of my personality that they're just there without me even thinking about them. In 12-step recovery, it says continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Again and again and again. Not a judgment, but as you said so very well, Jim, the only way I can get rid of that stuff is by being aware that it's getting in my way. Okay, let's see where we are here. It's not an obstacle course. In fact, the only hindrances are your own creations and the creations that the collective has maintained that you give credence to. So the your personal ones and the collective means the collective consciousness that we are part of. When you stop aligning to an idea that was claimed in separation, in fact, any judgment is something is an idea that's claimed in separation. I'm becoming more aware of that one. When you stop aligning to an idea that was claimed in separation or judgment, when you are no longer supporting it with a sense of identity that demands that it be there, you live beyond it. It loses significance. The meaning is altered. I don't feed it anymore. You know, it's that wonderful parable of the two dogs inside, okay? And one's pulling one direction, the other's pulling it. Who wins? The one you feed the most. So those ideas, those defense mechanisms that no longer work for me or that I no longer need, I stop feeding. Can you imagine how much energy we could gain if we stopped doing that? Just kind of turn the faucet off. Turn the faucet on the prejudices, on the judgments that are draining me of energy.
Draining.
Really. The meaning is it loses its significance. It's no longer important. I go, so I might find myself reacting to somebody or something. If I am awake enough or aware enough, I turn the volume over on myself and go, is that judgment really important to me anymore? Do I really want to hold on to that? Do I really want to drain my energy in holding on to that one anymore? Is it okay for me just to erase that and let it go? It's no longer part of my vocabulary. Remember what Leo Biscaglia did one time with one of his classes at Berkeley. He had a class in love. And he said, one day he did an experiment with his class. He brought in this big roll of brown paper, and he pasted it all over one wall and on the other wall. He said, okay, now on this one wall over here, I want you to write down all the negative words you can think of. So they, you know, they came up with the ones we normally think of, and they came up with things like judgment, fear, anger, whatever. Cover the whole wall. All right. Now on this wall, I want you to write down all the positive words you can think of. So love, nice, kindness, help, support, whatever. Fill that wall up. He said, okay, here's the deal. For the next month, every time this class meets, we can only use those words on that wall over there. If you use the words over in the bummer wall over here, you got to put a quarter in the pot. And of course, these are graduate students who are rather poor, so they couldn't afford dropping the pot. He said, you would be amazed. Just by consciously changing their vocabulary, he said, to a person, their mind and their attitude was changed. Everybody reflected on that as being true. I changed the words that I use, changed my vocabulary, everything else changed.
Yes.
Simple.
Yes.
Yet profound.
Jerry,
yeah.
So I'm thinking about experiential learning, the idea of, you know, people learn more through experience than they do from reading a book or anything like that. I used to work with a group. We would put corporations through experiences and then leverage that into planning for what was going to come up. For example, one time we showed a video of the CEO. So we had all these executives in the room. We showed a video of the CEO telling them that the company had just been sold and that he was on his way. He couldn't be there today because he was on his way to meet with the new owners. And In the meantime, here was the assignment. Would you please do an evaluation of where we currently are, but where we want to be? What is our vision of the future? These people went through an entire day planning the future of the company and how to improve it and all these, this entire new vision for the company. And at the end of the day, the CEO strolls in and says, this is what we asked you to do today. This was experiential learning. We wanted you to do something as though you were in this place. Now, the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm reading a book. It's called Imagine Heaven. It's about near-death experiences. Years ago, I read dozens of books on near-death experiences, but over the years, I just kind of let all that go. This book is hitting me hard. And one of the things that's occurred to me is the reason these people change is because of the experience that they go through in their near-death experience. This is what they consciously remember and the lessons that they apply from it. So most people who are in the book, their experiences are that they actually meet with this figure in white who reviews their life with them. And some of them say, "Who are you?" And the person pulls back the hood on their head, and it turns out to be Jesus. Other times, people, and all they can feel during this experience is love. The love of this person for them, the love of is everywhere. Other people, and I've met one person at least who had this experience, they experience going through hell. Often it is a dark corridor. They're being pulled by these creatures, these people, but they're more creatures than people. And this is a terrible, terrible experience. And then finally, when they beg God for forgiveness, they are free from this and they go to the same experience with the white with the person in white. It's an incredible book. It's called Imagine Heaven. And it anyway, I highly recommend it. But I'm just thinking about the whole idea of if we look at some of the experiences we're going through for those spiritual lessons and we begin to apply them, they're personal because they were our experience. But that may help us to grow even more quickly in the spirit toward the spiritual goals that we have. Thanks.
Thanks, John. I'm going to need to close up because I got to leave a little bit early this morning. So we'll do a short meditation and I will include a longer meditation when I put this together this evening or tomorrow, okay? So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes again. Deep breath. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Allow yourself to be enfolded in the sacred space that we have created for ourselves and for one another. And allow your mind, your heart, your soul to be enfolded in gratitude. And know that you carry this awareness with you always. Deep breath. Thank you all. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you again soon, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, guys.